Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, the guys people are talking about when they discuss monkeys and footballs. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast, episode 105. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit. I'm your dashing host, Chris. And with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Not good, Chris. Not good. I tore my labrum.
Dude, I had no idea you were even pregnant. All right, in today's show, Riz joins us for This Week in Reddit. We're going to talk about injuries to Taylor Decker and Amir Abdullah, which are very concerning. And we also talk about free agents, Matthew Stafford and the cap, OTAs, and way, way more. It's a really big show lined up here. Case, are you ready to go, my man?
It hoits.
Breathe through it, buddy. Breathe through it.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, let's do some quick announcements. First, we want to talk to you guys about some show dates and some things going on here that we need to talk about. First off, the show, we'll have a show this week, as you can hear, and next week there'll be another show, but the week of June 19th, sorry, fellas, we are not going to be doing a show. I'm going to be out of town, so we're going to have to let that one go. Then we'll keep going, and we're not taking a break on the 4th of July week. We'll still be rocking it out there, but the week of July 10th is going to be another down week for us. We're giving you guys a look ahead for that. I'm moving. And I'm not doing it from a moving truck or an airplane or anything else. So I'm sorry. It's my week and I'm going to take it. But as we get going through there, I have some remote kit that we'll be using. And once we get the new house, the new studio settled, we got some great new stuff coming for you guys. Speaking of that, don't forget to check us out and help us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from
Guam.
That's right. Michael, Matthew, Eric, Lucas, Joel, Bert, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Justin, John, Rand, Ross, Matt, Morgan, Randy, Peter, Matt G, Kalen, Scott, Joel, Greg, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. I also want to call out our newest patrons, Marcus, Bryce, Lucas, Danny, Alex, Floundericious, David, and Richard. And thanks again, Floundericious, for he joined us new and then he upped the ante. He raised the bar on it. So thank you very much for all of you donators. Once, as I said, the new studio is in place, you guys will get some special streaming of our Riz segment. You get to see it live. And even after the fact, we'll leave it up there for you guys to see some of the funny behind the scenes stuff that goes on. Riz is a riot. He's the same guy, but there's just things that don't make it on the air. And I think you guys would appreciate seeing that. It's just going to be our little reward to you for helping us out via the Patreon. We are also very happy to announce that we have Fantasy Football League returning to the Detroit Lions Podcast. We're going to have three league levels, a beginner league, the intermediate league, and the returning champions league for this year. If you're interested in joining us for the fantasy football team, stay tuned. Our next episode, we're going to have more information about it. In the meantime, if you want to get some of the info, you can hit Nathan Cheatham. It's at Nate Cheat. At NateChEat, or hit him up at Nathan@DetroitLionsPodcast.com for email. If you're interested, it's for the two higher leagues, it's a $30 entry fee, and for the lower league, it is a $15 entry fee. There will be cash prizes, but this is a fundraiser, so some of the proceeds will be coming back to the podcast to help keep us moving and do these improvements that we've been talking about. Don't forget to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast. And of course, check us out on Twitter at DETLionsPodcast. That's at DETLionsPodcast. It's the best place to see Case.
And my torn labrum.
Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. Give us that review. Let people know what they're getting into. All those great 5-star reviews are massively appreciated. You guys are absolutely the best. If you haven't reviewed yet, please head on over and let folks know what you think of the show. Don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. It's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast. Or leave us a message on the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. That's 929-335-4667. Leave us a message and get a chance to hear yourself on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit. And this first topic, really, this is, for me, this is pretty devastating. And having the Riz here is probably good to talk about this. We got Taylor Decker out indefinitely after having shoulder surgery. That's from Jamal Stevens. This is a huge hit on this team. Riz, I'm going to let you sound off first, man.
Yeah, it's bad when you lose your starting left tackle anytime. The saving grace, I guess, is that he's not officially out for the year. And Jim Caldwell said that. And getting injury information out of Jim Caldwell is sort of like, you know, extracting quality tasting things from a prune. So, I mean, that's a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, he was so good as a rookie. Other than the plays where he was really bad, which were obvious,
sure. He
was really, really good. and you expected him to iron out those really bad plays where he just completely whiffed. In his second year, he was more experienced. He was becoming a leader on the offensive line, which I think they needed. And man, it's tough to a shoulder injury. That's no joke. At minimum, I think it's a 4-month injury. Just because you can't lift weights, you can't participate in anything, you can't really do a whole lot. And that's taking us into the season. I mean, it's what, June 6th, June 7th, something like that. And yeah, that's it's a rough time for it. And you know, he's a guy. He was a very good first round pick. He was being counted on to take that next step to you know, be the proverbial, you know, franchise left tackle. I think he can be that, but this is a real setback for the team.
And I just want to jump in real quick and say, you know, Jeff is we're working under the basic assumption that this is probably a torn labrum, but we don't actually know. Like, for all we know, he might have died on the operating table, and we won't actually know about it until he signs his second contract. So,
it's so dark, but true.
Like, that's just like the nature of this. For all we know, it could have been a you know, a minor. This is far fetched. So I'm not suggesting this is likely. But for all we know, it could have been like a minor tear, and the surgery was, you know, preemptive or whatever. Unlikely, very unlikely. But that's what it could have been. And we're hoping it's not a meniscus issue, because that could be, you know, career altering in a much more real sense. But even if it is a labrum, I mean, I was looking into this today, and I mean, this is, it's not so cut and dried. I mean, there's three different kinds of labrum injuries that you can even have in the shoulder, with varying degrees of, you know, severity and recovery time. And I made the joke on Twitter, because I was on Twitter for a while trying to, you know, get as much information as I could. And I came to the, you know, relatively fast conclusion that nobody had any more information than what Jim Caldwell said. It was all, you know, speculation. You really get to start to hate the word timetable when you watch Twitter in that kind of situation, because everybody's throwing it around, you know, willy nilly, and like they know something. What I joked was that, you know, he's probably going to be out until at least from sometime between August to December. And but don't, you know, hold me to that. Because we really don't know right now. It sucks. It really does. I feel like before we commit to a strong emotion about it, I just want to wait and, you know, hear the actual, you know, diagnosis and hear the team give us a timetable, so we can then maybe judge what the actual severity of the injury probably was.
So I want to jump in with a strong emotion right away, because I know they're not going to give us any kind of timetable or understanding of how serious this injury is. And we're going to be sitting there picking our nose and worried about it. I'm frustrated, because this was going to be, I mean, he had such a great year last year, that this was going to be a year where we really, really were supposed to get great play out of Taylor Decker. And now, you know, everything's off the table. Who knows what we're going to get out of him? Is this injury going to dog him all year? That whole thing. I want to ask you, Riz, you know, the word is he injured it in practice last week. They're not even wearing pads. What is a left tackle doing that he could do that much damage to his shoulder during OTAs? Was it in the weight room? They say practice. I have no idea, because I can't imagine these guys are banging heads and shoulders in running these plays in OTAs.
Yeah, I don't think anybody actually saw when it happened, and that's sort of, you know, adds to the mystery with this whole thing. And it's hard to trust the Lions after the Amir Abdullah thing, which, you know, escalated to now where he apparently thinks he had a Lisfranc injury. We don't really know if he did or not. Nobody's confirming that. The podcast that he said that on sort of retracted it. So who do we trust in this? Do we trust Jim Caldwell? I can't. People that I do trust are people that are, I know, that are on the team, that are around the team every day. They tell me that the best case scenario for this is that he is going to be an IR designated to return guy. And that means he's out for at least 8 weeks. And I think that's probably the most realistic take that we're going to get, unless they miraculously decide to become, you know, revelatory with their injury information. I don't see that happening. So plan on an 8-week Band-Aid, basically. But
through the toughest stretch of our schedule.
Yes, the early part of the schedule is definitely
theoretically, obviously.
Yes, and I mean there are ways to compensate for him, but you do not just replace a Taylor Decker. This is where it really hurts, was because he's a very good run blocker already. And I think that the Lions' focus this offseason in upgrading the run game was improving the blocking in front of the runners that they had. And if he's not there, that directly alters that plan. And that's a real bummer, because he's a very good run blocking left tackle. Ricky Wagner on the other side, and he's going to stay on the other side. He is still a right tackle. I think Jim Caldwell even said that today, was that, you know, we're not entertaining moving Ricky Wagner to the left side, and that's good because he's a very good right tackle. There's no reason to try to fill one hole and create another one at the same time. You know, have a position of strength. And I mean, there's ways they can compensate, but man, it's tough. I hope that we hear that it's a partial labrum tear, that it's not a torn pec. That it's not like I forget the technical term of where your triceps attaches into the back of your shoulder. But that's like, I know that one from Orlando Pace. That's where his career ended, when he tore that.
Yeah.
Guys just aren't the same from that. I really don't get the vibe that that's what this is, because I think if that were the case, they would already be talking about putting him on IR. Like the Houston Texans have done this already with Derek Newton, their right tackle. They know he's not going to play. They already did it. Tavon Young, the Ravens cornerback. Tore his ACL. Yes, and they immediately were like, okay, he's done for the year. We're moving on. They're in the same situation with Dennis Pitta, their tight end, and his hip. So,
and I think he retired, or is
I believe he's going to retire tomorrow officially. But yeah, you're right. He's right on that, which sucks, but we're not to that case. And I think that if it were that serious, I think we would know. And I do think the Lions would acknowledge at least that much. So that's why I'm fairly optimistic that he will come back at some point. How good will he be this year? Your guess is as good as mine, boys.
So we're getting the same kind of acknowledgement that we got with DeAndre Levy, you're saying? Sorry, I don't mean to poke you.
I don't think there's a sloth biting his ass involved in this one.
Okay.
There's no parasitic, you know, whatever.
Volcano ash disease, yeah. You know, I'm thinking that after all the work that you mentioned that Quinn did in putting together this line this year, everybody was excited to see them play. If I'm Quinn, and maybe this was the reason why I'm not a GM, I'm running around the office with that baseball bat. He's just smashing shit, angry as hell at this point, because this is really a tough blow at all that offseason work to set up Stafford.
Well, and I think particularly this position is not one that they have focused on building depth at as much as they have so many of the other. And not to say that that's an easy thing to do, like, I mean, or that they haven't focused on the tackle position, because obviously they've done a lot of work, you know, between bringing in Decker and Taylor over the last couple of years. It's not like this front office has ignored the position. But at the same time, just, you know, the way things are situated, they're not deep at this particular position. So maybe short of quarterback, this was the most impactful injury that could have happened, which really, you know, puts them in a bit of a bind, which begs the question, will Bob Quinn panic? And there are some available left tackles on the market, that none of whom is particularly exciting, but there are guys out there, some guys who got paid well last year. You've got King Dunlap and Ryan Clady, and I think, you know, William Beatty, and all three of those guys are over 30 and not very good. There's some other even more questionable options out there, but whether or not they pursue any of those is, you know, the question is whether or not they think Robinson or one of the other guys on the roster will be able to, you know, patch it well enough to keep Stafford from getting injured. I think that's the real question in terms of whether or not they make a move there.
Yeah, the guys you mentioned, especially Ryan Clady, was total fool's gold. Ask Jets fans about how they feel about Ryan Clady. He hasn't played in a full year since 2012. He's 32 years old now. He was not good with the Jets last year. I mean, there's a reason why good teams get rid of players, and he was a player on a good team. They got rid of him in the Broncos. King Dunlap, aside from being hurt all the time, also has a sexual assault charge pending against him, so I think that would probably preclude him from Detroit. Will Beatty, yep. he's just not good. The one thing with Will Beatty, he is fairly decent in pass protection. He's sort of a pass protection specialist, but not a very good one at it. But I can't see them. I really do think the Lions are going to address this in-house. And, you know, Corey Robinson, of course, he's hurt right now. He's still recovering from foot surgery, which is a problem. He's not in OTA, so we don't really know what he's got. So the guys taking the reps now are Joe Dahl, who's probably best served playing right guard.
Right. But I think of him more tackle. As an inside guy, yeah.
Yes, definitely. He did play left tackle in college at Washington State. But if you go back and watch him at Washington State, and I actually reviewed my old scouting report from him on this, his first two steps in every single pass pro set there, and he never played with a tight end over him, and he played with those funky wide splits in that Mike Leach offense, were straight back. So he was very vulnerable on the inside shoulder. He's not a mauler. He's not a people mover in the run game, or at least hasn't shown that he can be. I always thought he was going to be a better left guard. I thought that was his natural position, but it's either him or Cornelius Lucas, and we kind of know Corny Lucas isn't very good. So
yes, now
it's scary.
Let me hit one more question about this, and I'll let you guys both weigh in, then we'll move on. Any regrets about letting Riley Reiff go?
No, I mean the situation was what the situation was, and you can't look in the rearview mirror and say, oh, you know, they still would have been overpaying for him even as a mediocre left tackle. And so long term, you do damage the team, especially if Riley Reiff, especially if Taylor Decker, you know, does come back and continues his progression. They could have put themselves in a much worse long term situation by, you know, overpaying for a long term contract for Riley Reiff, who was not going to take a 1 or 2 year deal.
Yeah, he's not as good as Ricky Wagner at right tackle, and I don't like the idea of moving him back to left tackle. I think he was settling in at right tackle, and he's a good right tackle. Minnesota, of course, is playing him at left tackle, and I think that Ziggy Ansah and the rest of the NFC North likes that. So yeah, I'm happy with him being gone. And that's nothing against Riley Reiff, but just
it's okay. Like he says,
you can't overpay and overcommit to guys who are average players. And I think that's what Riley Reiff is. He's an average offensive tackle, probably slightly above average at right tackle, but at left tackle, he's probably not even average. And that's that. I mean, what you're looking for here is a Band-Aid. If you're getting somebody who can get you through 8 games until Taylor Decker can get back on the field, can Corey Robinson do that? Maybe. Can Joe Dahl do that? Probably better odds that he can. Can a guy like Storm Norton, the undrafted free agent out of Toledo, who I happen to like,
the name, best name in the team, you know,
Storm Norton. Yeah.
Competition. I know Chris hates that, but
that's so fucking contrived and stupid.
He does have one of the best names. He's also got great hair. He can wear it in a man bun, which is pretty cool. I actually saw him down in Florida with the man bun with the whole chopstick look through it, which was just freaking awesome. I'm insanely jealous of that. Go for it, man. If you can do that, man, you will pull chicks left and right.
People. My wife would be thrilled.
what this means is Storm Norton is probably going to make the team now. And he was already probably my leading candidate as of the undrafted free agents to make at least a practice squad. I think he probably makes the team now and can show what he can do.
Sure.
And my expectations aren't that high. If you're curious, I did write a fairly vast scouting report for him for the Browns Wire on USA Today. If you Google it, you'll find it. He's not bad. He needs some work. He's a legit 6'8". I stood next to him down in Florida. I'm 6'5", and he was looking down at me. So I mean, he's got a lot of physical tools. He's not a people mover in the run game either. But again, if you're looking, if the primary focus here is to keep Matthew Stafford upright, I think Joe Dahl can probably do that. And I think, Storm Norton can probably do that. And if Corey Robinson is healthy, you can do that. This is why you got Michael Roberts as a tight end. This is why you got the Fells brother that I still can't remember which the freak one it is.
Darren.
why you got Darren. Them. You can run two tight end sets. You can bring your tight end now, put him on the left side, give whoever is there at left tackle replacing Decker some help, get Stafford to get the ball out a little bit quicker. Maybe you run a halfback chip at him or something. I say you run a fullback at him, but we don't have a fullback anymore. We'll talk about that in a little bit. there are ways to compensate for not having a good left tackle. The New England Patriots have done it for a long time. The Washington Redskins, before they got Trent Williams, did it for a long time and were fairly successful at doing it. It's not a prerequisite for having success and having a great left tackle. But at the same time, it was a lot better to have one than to not have one.
Yeah, losing one is definitely difficult. And the reef question had to come up because it's going to be probably the first chip that people use to start questioning the judgment that comes from Bob Quinn. So I just wanted to be one of the first ones to throw it out there.
Because obviously this was a predictable, circumstance. So.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. July and the shit that comes flying out of people's fingertips on the message boards.
Well, we could talk about this last year. Ziggy Ansah got hurt. Where was George Johnson?
What a huge mistake that was. That was my gigantic error.
I'm not even the biggest Bob Quinn fanboy. Like, to me, I my jury is still out. I need to see some things. But to blame this against him is about as ludicrous as this isn't
it's
like
the same people that say we need to get rid of Stafford.
This isn't even like Javid Best, who came out of college with a known injury issue, but we all loved. This is just.
It's the same people that say we need to get to trade Stafford and get something for him while we can. So let's move on to this next one. Now, I'm going to do a terrible job. I'm going to destroy his Reddit name. It's user Malachich or Malachi Empton or something like that. He originally brought it up in our last podcast post about a link where Abdullah was talking and he was at a Nebraska game. And he admitted to having a Lisfranc injury and not a torn ligament. And he was the first person to point it out. And I was like, what? And we started digging on that. And it's coming out that it was a Lisfranc. And I know, from your perspective, Riz, you were happy that he did not have a Lisfranc because that's not something you come back from. What are we going to see out of this guy? He was no red jersey in OTAs. He was out there taking balls. What do you think? What's the situation going to be with Abdullah this year, and what have you heard?
Okay, I still have not heard confirmation from anybody other than Abdullah himself that it was a Lisfranc. Now, you would think that an NFL player would know what surgery he had, so I'll probably give him the passing benefit of the doubt on that. But I mean, that's a fairly significant injury, and it's the type of thing that would get out if he had it. There are not that many places that perform that surgery, and I mean that. I still want to hear official confirmation that that's what he had. But assuming he had it, I'm going to go back to I'm going to wear my Texans hat right now, even though I'm wearing a Lions hat as we speak. Matt Schaub had this, and he was cleared after I think it was 14 weeks after he had the surgery. He was cleared for everything. Didn't mean he was any good anymore. What Lisfranc does, what it is, you fracture the bones in the middle of your foot. They separate side to side. They separate laterally, and you never recover the explosion and the strength in the foot. It just doesn't come back. Period. We saw it happen. That's what ruined Kevin Smith. For Lions fans, if you remember him.
Yep.
It totally destroyed his career. Now, they have come somewhat, they have made progress in the surgical procedure and in how to recover from it. But I'll tell you what, man, this is terrible news for Amir Abdullah, because he's a guy whose game is predicated on burst and speed and breaking off cuts like we saw him do on the run where he injured it. He's physically not going to be capable of doing that anymore. And if he can adapt his game to something else, that's great. But there's the problem. He's a 4.6 guy in the 40. He's not a speedster. His game was built on acceleration and quickness and vision and cutting sharply. And it's just not, history says that's not coming back. And that's a serious blow to the run game.
Well, here's the one thing that I want to say about this, and what I said immediately when I heard what he said. He said, and maybe I'm being pedantic, I don't know. He said tear, not fracture.
Yes, he did.
And
yes, he
did. That adds some intrigue to the whole situation, just in terms of exactly if it wasn't a full on issue, and if it was just a minor thing. And that may explain A, why he came back so quickly, and B, might, you know, mean that if it wasn't a full on, you know, full blown disaster of a situation, we might not be looking at a situation where he loses, you know, his best attribute. And I don't want to be overly optimistic about it either. I don't think we know right now. And much like the Decker thing, like I'm classically a let's wait and see kind of guy. So, and everybody who listens to us probably knows that. But I'll wait and see. I'll wait and see whether or not he can accomplish the same things or not.
Look at you breaking with tradition here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. No. This is tragic if true. So, hopefully, it is not nearly as bad as what it sounded like, and you're right. I think maybe the semantics of what he said, and there's depth behind the words to what he said that may hopefully bring us some hope and bring some hope for his career.
Right, because a ligament tear is different. A Lisfranc is a non-displaced fracture of the middle of your foot. If you tear a ligament, that is something different. Now, they often happen together, and maybe he had that too. And if so, that's even worse.
But you wouldn't think it would heal that fast.
We just don't know at this point. But yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes.
So yeah, anyway, we'll see.
We're all in the dark here until we actually get to see him on the field.
And he's probably in the doghouse for mentioning anything about it. So that should be that.
And,
will
and
be.
By the way, the podcast that's on deleted that portion of that interview. So who knows what's going on with that too.
Sure.
Very interesting. Okay. Well, let's go from Decker to Abdullah, back to Decker, but this time it's Eric. Big question out there right now. Should we sign Eric Decker? And beyond that, should we sign Jeremy Maclin? How about you give us some thoughts there, Case? Where is your head at on these?
And beyond that, should we sign every free agent who comes along?
Probably.
You know, honestly, probably. I'm not particularly opposed to either of these guys. I think signing either Maclin or Decker would, you know, boost our receiving core back up to essentially where it was last year, with Bolden. I think Macklin might be the best bet in terms of filling that kind of role for the team. Just, I mean, he only put up 2 touchdowns this last year, but the 2 previous seasons he had 8 and 10. So, I mean, he knows how to work the red zone, which is something that I feel like we're majorly lacking right now. I don't think we'll have a problem gaining yards. Although this whole Taylor Decker thing throws everything, you know, cause I was expecting improved pass protection or at least being optimistic about seeing improved pass protection. Now I'm not so sure. But Macklin makes some kind of sense, but if we're looking at 2017 almost as, you know, this isn't our year, which is how I'm viewing it, and I'm not saying that anybody else should view it that way. You get to decide, you know, how hyped you are personally. That's how I view it. And so I don't see putting a Band-Aid situation on this as necessarily a good thing. I'd be much more apt to bring back Bolden just because of how familiar he is with the team and how much I think he's a leader and a teacher, and how maybe, you know, Kenny Galladay, and we'll get into him in a little bit, could learn from Bolden in terms of route running and maybe using his physicality better. But I just don't know that either of these guys, unless this was the year and that was the piece we were missing, I'm not sure it makes a ton of sense to throw a bunch of money at either of them.
You guys know my axiom about beware when good teams give up on players that seem useful. The Kansas City Chiefs are a good football team. They're a legit AFC contender. Yeah. They just let their number one wide receiver walk out the door. That should raise a flag for anybody. Now, I don't know why they did it other than the fact that he did get hurt last year. He has some injury issues in his past. But, man, he's a really good player. And I'd like to see him in Detroit, but at the same time, everything you said, Case, I can't argue with, because you're right. I actually like Eric. I like Decker better for the Lions. Okay. And here's why. He has worked out of the slot before, and he's a big target. He's great in the red zone. He's really good at separating himself in that 5 to 15 yard area. He does better than Anquan Bolden did. He does better than Marvin Jones, who doesn't get open, period, in that. Plus, he's a big target. He's cleared for health. He got hurt last year. Before that, he was really good for the Jets, and they did not have good quarterback play. Imagine what he could do with a good quarterback. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right, and I shouldn't have.
I like the concept of bringing him in.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said Macklin is the better red zone threat either. That's a mistake on my part. If you're looking at touchdowns, Decker clearly is, you know, per game touchdown rate is way high over the last 5 seasons. So,
and I'm going to go.
Decker's a good player, and he fits the need. He fits that Bolden role very nicely of being a physical slot guy who can also hop outside and make things happen there. He's a good blocker. He's a little bit young. I think he's still only 28, 29 years old. Is he really 30?
Yeah, he is. Mm. How time passes. Yeah,
it does, man. I gotta remember scouting him at Minnesota. Jeez.
Yep.
And I agree with both of you guys. The thing that I'm gonna go back to the first 2 topics we had. If Taylor Decker's down and Amir Abdullah is down, I don't know that those guys are gonna do a whole lot to help this offense, because it's gonna be pretty one dimensional across the board. So, yeah, interesting. More free agent talk. The big names we thought were signed, but these are some pretty big guys. And as you said, Riz, when guys like names like this are let go, there's a reason. There's a reason they're on the street. And
the reason Decker's on the street is because the Jets are trying to be terrible. So that's a different situation.
You're right. Absolutely right about that.
If you know the player, if you can recognize the name of the player on the Jets, they won't be a Jet for long because they're going to get cut. They cut David Harris today. No, by the way, for the Lions, just no.
Let's just get this out of the way.
they're going to cut Matt Forte probably pretty soon.
Stop it, Case. Stop it, Case.
I love Matt Forte.
Softer no than David Harris, but love. Still no.
Case, it's one love for you. God. Sorry, my friend.
I love Zach Center.
I'm going to tell you right now, and to veer off into the NFL at large, this New York Jets team this year could be historically terrible. they are absolutely shooting for the 0-16 mark that the 2008 Detroit Lions did.
That's ours, mother. And stand back. That's ours.
I'll tell you this. If they do it, they have a worse roster than the Lions did, because at least the Lions had Calvin Johnson on it. There are not five players on the New York Jets right now who could make the Detroit Lions roster. That's not hyperbole. That's a dead fact.
Well, let's, you know, talking about free agents, let's talk about some other free agents. One that we did sign, Caldwell made a statement that Matt Asiata will not be serving as a lead blocker in Detroit because a fullback isn't part of the way the Lions are going to function, thanks to Thabe 331. And with that kind of that topic, we talk about the fact that we cut Michael Burton along the way. So significant changes coming to the offense this year, I feel.
And I feel like, I mean, this is one of those, I think I called it kind of situations. It's not that we don't like Michael Burton. And we talked about this, Jeff and I both mentioned in the last show we did, you know, that Michael Burton is a really good run blocker. I'm not sure that we haven't seen enough of him, you know, in terms of actually carries or touches in the pass game to know whether or not he brings anything significant there. But he does the one thing that he's, you know, supposed to do the most really well, and that's run block. So it sucks to lose a player that is good at a thing, but if you're not going to use him, and they used him less and less as the year went on last year, which I think is a sign that that's just the direction Jim Bob Cooter is taking the team. You know, it's taken him a little bit of time to implement his direction for things. Then there isn't you're essentially wasting roster space by keeping him on the team. So
yeah, and Asiata has some value as a short yardage back. He's not terrible. If you recall, I think it was 2 years ago when he had a really good game against the Lions. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I've seen a few good games out of him.
He's probably an upgrade over Joik Bell in that role. Not that Joik was here much last year, but you get the point. He's not a bad player. He's a serviceable guy. He did have interest from other teams. And I kind of think it's a case where the Vikings didn't have a place for him anymore. They brought in Latavius Murray to sort of take over that role, and he's not as good as Latavius Murray. But he can be a guy who can get you on third and two, he can get you 3 yards. And on if first and ten, he's also going to get you 3 yards. Yes.
Yeah. Back to that, yeah.
Yeah,
he can catch the ball, which is that's something that every Lions running back kind of has to have at this point. That just is the way they run the offense.
Really good being a blitzer and getting out into a pass pattern. So yeah. He does have some assets that work for this Lions team, even if Decker is hurt.
He's probably the best pass blocking back on the team.
I would think so. He's certainly better at it than Riddick and what's left of Amir Abdullah and his oddly shaped foot.
So what's the damage that Michael Burton, now with the Chicago Bears, is going to do to us two times this season?
Oh, God, I don't want to know.
Because he's good at that role.
He is good at that role, and they use that role. Mm-hmm. And Jordan Howard, man, that guy's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The Bears and their offensive line, even though they let Kyle Long go, their offensive line could be pretty darn good, especially at you know, just running forward and kicking ass. And that's, I think, what they're going to be tasked with doing because their quarterback is either the Giraffe or Trubisky. And I don't think either one of those guys really scares anybody. And their wide receivers don't scare anybody. They could run the ball 40 times a game, and Michael Burton could find a nice role there. It's a good home for him. I begrudgingly say I understand what the Bears are doing. I don't think they're very good yet. But they got better by getting him, man. Yeah. That's a blow.
I mean, it's not gonna put him, you know, into the Super Bowl or anything like that. But it certainly was a quality move, and it was a big upgrade over the fullback they had. So
yeah, for sure. All right, so let's move on to the real important news. Huge breaking news. Everyone stopped watching the Stanley Cup playoffs for this one. The NFL Network came in with number 31 in the top 100 players countdown, and Matthew Stafford sealed the position. Thanks for the post in the subreddit Honolulu Blue Balls. This is huge, guys. This is really the shining light on the 2017 season, and really puts the focus on. I mean, are we talking Super Bowl now? Number 31 in the top 100 is pretty sweet, huh?
God, I hate that ranking. It's the worst thing. It is the worst thing. It's so awful, and it's pure hype. That's all it is. Even more than the Pro Bowl, it's pure hype.
So you're on the Super Bowl train then.
And it's 31 sounds great for Stafford. But if you actually look at it, it's not like that big of a compliment compared to, you know, how many quarterbacks there are going to be ahead of him, including Dak Prescott, I might add. It's just
boy.
What a lame thing. I hate that we're even talking about it, because I feel like we're giving it more credit than it deserves.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I had to write about it because J.J. Watt came in 35, and as you guys know, I cover the Texans.
And he had a good response to it.
Yes, he did. He said, this is the biggest. He censored himself. He was going to say bullshit, but he wound up saying it's a joke because he played 2.5 games last year. He wound up higher than the NFL sack leader last year. he rightly called it stupid. You know, if you go back a couple of years, there was a thing in the Lions locker room where none of the guys, every single Lions player was asked, and Kyle Mikey went around and did this. He asked every single Lions player if they voted for it. Not one of them said that they did.
Yeah.
So there's some, you know, little gray area behind how this is chosen to begin with. It might be a little bit disingenuous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nice for Matthew Stafford. It's nice that he's getting recognized a little bit finally around the league, because for so long the conversation about him was always negative, and now it seems like it's positive, and I hope that continues.
So we're hoping that he's not the next Jay Cutler is essentially what we're getting at here. I remember back one of the first years they did it, when Ray Rice was on the Ray Lewis was on the steep decline. Like, he was just like
barely
a
upright
shell of his former self, a shell. And somehow he still made it up into the higher numbers on the list. Like, he played terrible and still made, you know, a high number on the list. And it was, you know, I don't know that whether or not their method has changed since then, but it's been a joke from day one. You know, whatever method they're using to collect their data, it is just awful. And it's pure hype. And it's, like I said, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm never going to bring it up again until next year, when we inevitably have to talk about it for a minute.
Oh, you're going to be hearing about this for a couple of months now, Case.
When a playoff game this year, Matthew Stafford's up in the top 15 next year.
Oh, goody.
And doing so with only half a Taylor Decker and Amir Abdullah out there with a crutch.
Yeah. No, what's going to happen is that, you know, the team's going to have a bad year because pass protection falls apart, and Stafford's going to fall out of the top 100 again, and Lions fans are going to be all, you know,
up
upset.
And yes.
Get rid of this bum. Let's see what Rudock can do.
Mike Vellini's career goes on. That's right. All right.
Oh, God.
You know, really quick, let's talk about what you can do to, you know, first off, let's talk about lists. And lists like this NFL Countdown is, do we want to talk a little bit about the behind the scenes, Riz, about it's basically just clickbait? They found that when you build lists, people click a lot. And
Shut up, man. You're killing my career.
A five things that Jeff Risden wants to write a list about right there.
There you go.
All right. So, you know, there's
top five Iron Maiden songs. Go.
There's other things you can list off. A couple of things you could list off. And I'm going to list off Amazon.com, Fanatics, and SeatGeek. How about that? Huh? Right there. We got three great sponsors, three great helpers for the show. where when you do your shopping there, if you start at DetroitLionsPodcast.com, you can use that shop link on the main menu to head to Amazon or to Fanatics or to SeatGeek. Anything, I mean, you can get anything from Amazon, right? It's all there, from autographed gear. You need a generator? Hey, you live in, it's storm season, right? You might be without power. You can't let that fridge go down. Get yourself a generator from Amazon. Anything you want, you can get anything from there. They'll ship it to you. Fanatics, you want your official gear? Well, you can't get that really from Amazon. Head on over to Fanatics from DetroitLionsPodcast.com and go get any of your college, your pro, your sports gear. Rep your team. It's the official great, great stuff. And of course, if you want to go to the show, the theater, music, concerts, sporting events, the whole thing, use the link to SeatGeek, buy yourself some tickets. All of those things from DetroitLionsPodcast.com at that shop link. All three of those great partners give us a little kickback on your purchase. It does never cost you more, but they just love it when you come there from us, and they give us a kickback for sending you there. So help us out by doing something you're going to do anyway. Head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that shop link before you buy anything and help out the show. All right, let's move on. Since we're talking about money, there's this guy on the team that we were just talking about, number 9, who's now going to be number 31 this year, Matthew Stafford. He could save the Lions some cap space and also have a big contract at the same time from this weird website. I've never heard of it, DetroitLionsPodcast.com, and this wacky writer, Ash Thompson. This is a real contrarian kind of thing. This is like talking about the Laffer curve with taxes, right? It's like you're going to lower taxes and get more revenue. That doesn't make any sense, right? It's how can you save cap space and give Stafford a big contract at the same time? And Ash does a pretty good job of breaking it down, doesn't he, Riz?
He does. And unfortunately, I don't have it right in front of me, but I read it. And he makes a very compelling case of why Matthew Stafford would be agreeable to signing this sort of deal where the cap hit is sort of, you know, backloaded a little bit. And that's not typical of what deals are these days. A lot of times the big signing bonus gets fronted, and the Lions don't necessarily have to do that now. So he really does make a good case about it, you know, about giving them flexibility in the next couple of years while still rewarding Matthew Stafford and giving him a deal that's going to be higher than what Matt Ryan got, and higher than pretty much any quarterback you can name. I will add to this, Derek Carr is also due an extension soon, and everybody I've talked to around the NFL in various capacities thinks that Stafford is going to sign his, and he will be the highest paid player. And then Derek Carr will sign it for like $2 million more the very next day to take that throne away, just because that's the way the NFL works.
Great for the, I mean, honestly, that's what I hope happens, just because it would be good for the narrative. So we don't have to deal with the whole narrative about Stafford being the highest paid, but that's like a purely like, just so we don't have to deal with idiots kind of situation.
He will be the highest paid player. He will get more than Andrew Luck did. And I will say, I think he deserves more than Andrew Luck does.
Yeah.
Because I think he's done more with what's around him than what Andrew Luck has. And I don't know. We'll go on that.
Honestly, I have the two of them. And as much as, you know, Stafford got compared to Jay Cutler early in his career a lot, I think the new comparison is to Andrew Luck.
I don't think Andrew Luck is the player that Stafford is. I think they're close.
I agree.
But I think Stafford's a much better quarterback. And again, if you'd have flipped the names around, you would not know as much or hear as much about Andrew Luck as you do Matthew Stafford today if he had to play with these Lions teams over the years.
Real quick, I don't want to get into this is a whole long conversation. I just the reason I say that is because they both, I don't think there are two franchise quarterbacks in the NFL who have had to deal with worse situations than Stafford and Luck. And by extension, Cutler.
Yeah. And it's interesting. The situation that Luck walked into was a pretty, pretty juicy one. It was pretty nice.
And then fell apart.
And then it very quickly fell apart out from underneath him. Yeah. I would love to see Stafford get his opportunity in a juicy situation like that. I love saying juicy right now. So juicy, juicy. Anyway, yeah, Ash talks a little bit about Stafford's cap hits being around 17.5, 23.5, 25, 27, and 29 million over the years. He makes some pretty...
Those are big numbers, man.
Yeah, but he makes some pretty compelling reasons why it's not that bad, actually. And the numbers overall, the way he put it was that it's more of the accountants are more taking a notice of it than the team is as far as cap hits and stuff. So very, very interesting. It's a very intricate business. We should maybe have Ash come on the show and do a cap rundown for folks and just do kind of capology a little bit, because there's a lot of nuance to that and how it works. And I think a lot of people know a little bit about it. And I'm one of them. And the whole reason Ash wrote that is because I was like, why the heck don't we just sign Stafford and with all this extra cap money we have right now, just front load it and eat it all up with the Stafford contract and free things up later. But he makes one hell of a case as to why not.
He really does. He does. And he talks about how like if you balance the contract out, it doesn't leave you out to dry if he doesn't live up to the situation or if he gets injured or something later. It's a really good article. I would strongly recommend you read what Ash wrote, because it's quality information. I don't necessarily agree with all of his premises in it, but I kind of think he's right on to something here.
What the heck, Ash? What did you do? All right, let's move on to the next one. A little less thick of a topic, but one nonetheless that we've kind of hinted at and talked about a little bit before. The Lions are going to officially move Alex Carter to safety. This was from the Lionist. He posted it in the subreddit. And this is about his only shot, right?
That's thick with two C's. But yeah, Alex Carter is getting one more chance. And we talked about it. You know, Jeff and I both had discussed this several shows ago about the potential, move for him over to safety. And he's not ever going to be a cornerback in the NFL. So no. He gets one year, one off season. And we all saw, how things just changed significantly for the team in terms of the tackle position and what the guys lower on the depth chart who may or may not otherwise have made the team, are now looking at. So there's always the potential for an opportunity. He's probably not going to make the team, which means he's probably done with the team. But he'll have a chance to show if he's got the skills necessary to play, and he'll be more of a free safety, a backup to Quinn type situation. I think.
I think you're right. That's actually the role I saw him in at Stanford, and I wrote that in the scouting report. I thought he was a safety, the optimal position for him was a third safety as a coverage type of safety, and I think that's the role he is gunning for in Detroit. There is an opening behind Glover Quinn for, a backup free safety or that coverage-oriented third safety. I'm not optimistic about it because he's been hurt. We haven't seen him be good when he was marginally healthy. He's certainly not a cornerback. I think you're right on that. I'm not counting on him. He would not be on my projected making the 53-man roster at this point. But, this is his best shot at doing it. And I applaud the Lions for trying, for giving him, one last shot to try to redeem himself and try to salvage something out of he was, 2014, right? Or was he 15? Draft pick, third round. It all bleeds together to me. But, yeah, this is definitely his last shot to make it. He will not be on the practice squad. I don't think the Lions would waste time with him on that. I think that it would be one of those situations that I agree. I think his agent would be like, dude, if he's not making the team, let him go. And the Lions, for even under Martin Mayhew, were good at this as well. They didn't screw agents. And I would like to think that Bob Quinn is also in that boat, because you never know when you're going to need that agent to give you something. Mm-hmm. So, this is one of those deals where he's either going to make the team or he won't be here. And, I hope he makes it. I hope he can salvage something from it. But from what we've seen so far, I'm not real optimistic about it.
All right, let's move on. There's a guy out there who I've always had a soft spot for him, and I don't know why. I should have been grilling him, giving him a little bit of hell out of there from the stands and so on. But Nick Fairley, a guy we signed who had so much potential, but just love them donuts a little too much, and couldn't quite realize it. I think his last year here, he really had found an opportunity with Caldwell. He slimmed down and he really was moving forward. And then he chased the dream on a 1 year deal with the Rams, and he's kind of faded in and out of relevance since then. And well, he's got a heart condition now. And we'll start with you, Case. Where are you at with this unfairly? I mean, some people were even earlier in the offseason talking about maybe bringing him back, but he could be done, right?
You know, I don't share your feelings about Nick Fairley. I was never a fan of his, and the on and off type of effort he gave in Detroit did not endear him to me in the least. Sue and his relentless effort, regardless of his issues, did endear himself to me.
He was a psychopath.
They're very, very different players. And I mean, the potential was there, but his inability to stay healthy, not this heart, issue. Mm-hmm. So he isn't my favorite player. I certainly feel for him as much as I feel for anybody, that I don't know.
Yeah.
Going through a health crisis.
Yep. Nick Fairley was a guy, and I should probably clarify. He was a dude that I rooted for because of his character. It was a character thing with him. He could have tried every play. He should have tried every play, no question. He could have gotten his weight right. He could have done a lot of things, but there was some character stuff going on. But he was a guy that could correct. And like I said, when Caldwell got here, we started seeing some of that. And that was really what he needed, was somebody like a Caldwell to bring him around and really start doing the right things. I still, after he was gone, I worried about him when he went to the Rams, being a guy that he kind of lost that kind of fire to keep himself straight and what he needed. And I worried about what he was going to be, not only for the rest of his career, but after his career, right? You see these guys so often kind of flame out, and boy, this one's going to put him in a tough spot, because something like this, you really can't come back from. I know, Riz, you've got some experience in the area of the heart condition world, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Actually, 2 years ago today, I got out of the Cleveland Clinic from having open heart surgery. So I'm a little sensitive to the heart issue.
And really, Case, I just really have to tell Case, there you go, Case, something good in Cleveland. All right, go ahead.
yes. All kudos to the Cleveland Clinic for saving my life. I'm very grateful for that. Obviously, if he has a heart condition, and I don't know what it is, and it's not the same condition that I had. I actually had the same surgery that John Fox, the Chicago Bears coach, had, where my heart pumped blood out of my heart, but the valve wouldn't close and it flooded back in, which is really bad. This is not something that you trifle with. And when you're confronted with the fact that you have a heart condition, it is life altering. It is something that weighs very heavily on you. And knowing Nick Fairley a little bit, I've met him a handful of times. I interviewed him once when he was coming out of Auburn. He's going to be a guy that this is one of those things where he's going to look at it and be like, oh my God, I know him well enough to know that that will be the case with him. And he's going to be floored by the fact that his football career is probably over from this. He's been missing from OTAs. He's been trying to get second opinions on it to find somebody who can tell him that he can play, and he hasn't had any luck with it. And it's devastating. And I hope that he gets whatever cardiac care he needs. He can afford the best care in the world. I'd recommend the Cleveland Clinic, obviously, but whatever he wants to do, he can do.
Case would rather die in Philly than go to the Cleveland Clinic.
Well, there you go. I'm sort of with you, Chris. Nick Fairley was one of those guys. God, I wish he would have tried harder, but at the same time, he was a different kind of cat, but I like that kind of cat. The sort of, I'm not necessarily defined by myself being a football player. Mm-hmm. And I think Ndamukong Suh was that and was all consumed at being the best football player he could be. He never really got that from Nick Fairley. But at the same time, he was also one of those guys, like, he was one of the Detroit Lions from that era that I would love to hang out with. I'd love to go out to dinner with him and just chill with him.
Yeah. 'Cause
he seemed like a genuinely, you know, to quote Bill and Ted, a righteous dude, you know, just a good guy to hang out with and a good person. I mean, yes, he could have been a better football player. And you're right on about the whole thing. The transition from Jim Schwartz to Jim Caldwell was the perfect thing for him, because he needed somebody who would push him, but at the same time not be so hyper negative about everything. And that was Jim Schwartz's biggest failing, was that he couldn't ever be positive about anything in life ever. And Jim Caldwell's the guy, he's stern, but Sam, if you do something good, he's going to acknowledge that you did something good. And that was revolutionary for him. And, you know, Nick, I wish Nick well. I really hope he can get back on the field, but it doesn't sound like he's going to. And, you know, from one cardiac patient to another, man, I hope you get the care that you need. I hope it turns out okay, because it's scary as hell. And when you wake up and you find there's a tube in your neck that can chemically detach your head from your body in case anything goes wrong with your heart surgery, that is something you never forget and never want to experience again. And I hope he doesn't have to go through that.
For sure. Absolutely. I second that. All right, let's move to something a little more upbeat than Nick Fairley's situation. And as you said, best of luck to Nick. I hope things turn out well for him. And I hope he continues to make the good decisions that put him in a good place, because he's a guy that deserves good stuff in his life. Let's talk about some rookie hype. We got Kenny Golladay out there in the field. And, you know, this is one of those things. Look, this is one of those things where I think in this offseason we're going to hear something very similar to our
– I love Zach Center.
That we got so often and much from our guy Case, because everyone knows
– God, I love that kid.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is I'm actually worried that people are going to think the opposite, that I hate Kenny Golladay, and that is totally not true. I'm on board – at least in terms of his potential. You know, he's a guy that looks like he has the physical traits to be a true, you know, number one, and maybe more in a role sense than a production sense. But even in a production sense, like, he's got the speed, the size, and the ability to catch, which are all crucial to, you know, really being a top tier player at that position. What he's lacking in is the skill and the physicality.
Okay? That's bullshit.
And here's where I'm worried. Like, people are so hyped up about the things he's been doing in OTAs, which you'd think people would learn. I mean, that's going to insult a lot of people who are big fans of what Kenny Golladay has been doing. I'm not trying to insult you, but how many players have we seen do great things in OTAs and then fall flat? And a lot of it is for the very same reasons. We've got Corey Fuller was always, you know, the camp guy who made amazing catches. I mean, he had a drop issue that Golladay doesn't have. So I'm not trying to say that Golladay isn't a better prospect, isn't a better like floor than Corey Fuller, because I'm not saying that. Just that right now in non-contact drills, he's making spectacular catches. That's awesome. I love that. My concern about him was never necessarily about his ability to catch the ball. It was about his ability to separate from tight defenders, physical defenders, and to use his solid route running abilities, you know, in and out of breaks, et cetera, to do that, as well as beating man press or any kind of press situation. And that's
French press,
right? Sure, why not?
Wow. Yeah, okay.
Get them all. Get them all hyped up while we're on that. So I get the hype. I do, because he's coming out of the situation where him, much like most of the Lions draft class, is coming out of a situation where everybody after the draft was kind of like, everybody in the national media, not Lions fans mm-hmm. necessarily, mm-hmm. Was kind of like, about where the Lions took all these players. And so we feel, you know, as a fan base, disrespected by that. And we feel an extra urge to get behind anything positive that we see coming from these guys.
So, it's Troy versus everybody, bitch.
Right, exactly, exactly. It's, well, not that I don't understand the mentality. It's just the... until I see him do those things that I had concerns about, none of this other stuff really makes me that excited. Like it's a lot better than hearing about him having drop issues in camp.
Sure. Which we're so used to with so many different players.
Right.
But the
right.
one thing is, the only way you're going to know that Kenny Golladay has reached his peak is once you hear that
he pushed Calvin's Johnson.
And then you're going to know that he's really kind of hit the top of what he's at. Where are you at, Riz? What are you thinking about Golladay? Are you going to put Case in his place, or are you going to jump on the bandwagon here?
I think there's good reason to be optimistic, but Case is absolutely right in that.
I love how often you're saying that lately.
Oh my God, I know, man.
Let's talk about Cleveland.
Drink after this point. So most, for people who don't know, most of OTAs in the work are 9-on-7. That's 9 on the offense and 7 on the defense, and nobody's really rushing the passer. So it's very easy to get open and make good catches. There are some 11-on-11 drills, and from what I've heard, Golladay has also done well in those. But yeah, you're right. The biggest thing with him is the same issue with Marvin Jones. He cannot shake defenders who can get on him quickly in his route. And that was true in Northern Illinois. And the you know, you guys know I'm a Mac sycophant through and through. The Mac does not have very good cornerbacks, and he couldn't reliably get open in the Mac. So he just used his size and his frame and in his route running, which is better than I think was advertised by the national media. He's extremely good at catching the ball away from his body. I don't know what Mel Kiper and Todd McShay were looking at when they said that he couldn't do that. They clearly didn't watch him.
I hate when receivers catch the ball against their body all the time in their highlights. I think Ebron did a lot of that in his college highlights.
Yes, he did.
And that bothers me. So.
And Kenny Golladay is very good at working the sidelines and getting those both feet down and you know, making himself a big target. He's really good at those things. He's very good on comeback routes, which I think you're going to see him do a lot of. But, yeah, I mean, is he this year's Andrew Peacock? Is he this year's Jace Billingsley? You know, all these guys who have gotten praise from their teammates and praise from coaches about being great in off-season workouts. And then they get to training camp, and they look pretty good. And then they get into the preseason, and they're playing against live bullets, and they wind up showing that they barely belong on a practice squad. I'm not like Case said. I'm not saying that's what's happening with Kenny Golladay, but you have to temper your enthusiasm here, because the situation is not it's designed perfectly for what he does well, and he's not being asked to do things that he doesn't do well or needs work on. And that's what the preseason is going to be for. If he can show that he can get open against NFL man coverage and still catch the ball and you know, have the concentration that he showed when he was at Northern Illinois, I'm going to be very happy. And I had him as a early fourth round pick in my grading, so I was okay with the Lions taking him. I think he fills a good need, and there's certainly a void there for a bigger receiver who can make plays. You talked earlier about the red zone issues. This is a guy who can really help in the red zone. And
if he can be more physical, which is where my concern is.
You're absolutely right on that. I can't argue.
You're all wrong. It's not the time for that. It's not the time for that. The time for
we have to crown his ass, and you know, we are who we thought he was.
Do that in July. Do that in July. Right now is the time to say this guy's looking great. What a great pick. Oh my God, we're in love. I love this guy. He's the best, and we can start tearing him down in July if we have to.
He is a good draft pick. He really is. Compared to the guys who were taken around him, I'm really happy that the Detroit Lions took him. And I'm optimistic for him, but at the same time, he was there for a reason. He's going to be no better than the number 3 wide receiver in his rookie year, probably the number 3 A wide receiver. He's going to play. Case said he's better than Corey Fuller. I don't think there's anybody who would argue that. He's a very different type of receiver than Corey Fuller, but he's better than him.
Yeah.
If he can catch, let me put on my fantasy football hat here. I think he's going to catch about 30 to 35 passes for about 450 to 500 yards. And because I think he is going to get a lot of looks in the red zone, I think he can catch 5 touchdowns. And I think that's fantastic production for his draft spot. But the problem is, I'm not sure if he's ever going to do a whole lot more than that. And his ceiling might be 50 catches, 750 yards, and a career, output hiccup year of 9 touchdowns, but the rest of the time he gets about 4 or 5.
And that's okay.
The Lions need that.
Right. They do. Mm-hmm. But I won't necessarily, I don't want to disagree with that. But I mean, in terms of the physical tools he has, he could end up, about him, it's about learning the route running and learning the physicality of the game. So to me, he's a coachable player, and whether or not they're good, whether or not they do a good job of coaching him is, he's the classic raw player, and the percentage of those players who turn out to be great is pretty minimal.
Well, let me throw back really quickly to,
I think Jim Caldwell once again won a coaching battle.
So I have a feeling we're going to see some real movement here with our man Galladay.
Jump in the lake.
But I don't think it would be the most surprising thing ever if he did end up someday looking like a legitimate, number one wide receiver on the outside, just because that's the height, the size, the speed, the ability to catch the ball in interesting ways. the good hands is what I'm saying.
Yeah. One thing to remember with traits, him, he was so stymied in college. You have to consider in his junior year, 2015, his backup at wide receiver wound up being his quarterback. They went through 4 quarterbacks in 2 weeks at Northern Illinois. So for him to go to what Matthew Stafford is throwing, that's an unbelievable adjustment for him.
He's going
to
have some mangled fingers.
He's a real test.
Yeah.
He's a real test for this coaching staff.
Yep.
I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah. I feel good. I think he's a good pick. I think we may see some good things out of him. It's still early, but the hype is real. The hype is, it's fine to have that hype this time of year and build it up. And especially when the Taylor Decker news and you got your Amir Abdullah news going on, it's okay. It's okay to be worked up and excited about a guy like Kenny Galladay. He has a lot of things going for him. And if he turns out great, awesome. If not, well, you know what? You're still a fan of the team and you went with it. So it's not going to hurt that bad.
I'll still buy my Michael Roberts jersey, the silver throwback.
Well, so make sure you get that Burton jersey sold first, okay?
I will do a swap meet.
And I'll buy it through our links on the website, too.
Oh, yes, DetroitLionsPodcast.com. That's shop link. Hey, speaking of a little bit of stuff we got going, Riz, you said you put your fantasy hat on there. You thinking of joining us here for the Detroit Lions Podcast Fantasy League?
I will do that just to give people the pleasure of being a so-called NFL expert, because I'm really not good at fantasy football. I'm pretty good at ascertaining what guys are going to do fantasy wise, but I don't have a great strategy for this is when you take your quarterback, this is when you take your running back, and this is when you take your tight end.
Take your quarterback dudes, in the first round, Jeff.
I did that last year.
And it was amazingly, it's only been 3 years removed from my uncle taking Eli Manning in the first round. So
so last year, my first 2 picks, we'll go back in time here to show how bad I am at fantasy football. My first 2 picks were Andrew Luck and Jimmy Graham. Didn't work out very well for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Players, definitely you should play out in the league. You should definitely play in the league this year. So more information coming next week, guys, as we said earlier in the announcements, but the Detroit Lions Podcast Fantasy League is back. Get yourself some big dollars playing against a guy like Rizden, who has no idea what the hell he's doing. Riz, I know you got to go, man. Thanks for joining us again this week and doing the 3-way on This Week in Reddit, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on the Reddit NFL podcast.
My pleasure, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, with that over, we're going to step into probably the most important part of the podcast, and the part where Case has really made his name in this world.
Around the division. his.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, wait. That is so good.
Soak it in.
So yep. Good.
There isn't a lot to report on this week, but we're jumping back into it for the first time in a little bit because there are a couple news items. We'll start, on the bottom with the Bears, as always. They obviously signed a player we liked in Michael Burton right off the drop. And you have to think that the reason they signed him so fast is that they watched him closer than most other teams and saw what he can do. I had seen somebody in the subreddit, questioning why we all love Michael Burton.
Hmm.
And that's okay. It's okay to question those things. Obviously the point being, he's barely used. He's not been a factor in the run or the pass game. They don't use him as a short yardage back and they never really tried, which I think is a little bit of a disservice to him, frankly, to never even try using him in that role. But I don't know, what goes on at practices. But so when I did my tape reviews the last couple seasons, the thing I have seen from him is that even in a limited role, he's just really good at his job. He's not, he's not going to be a huge playmaker for any team, but he is good at run blocking out in space and on the line. He's just good at it. He knows who he's supposed to hit, and he hits them hard, and he takes them out of the play consistently. There were just weren't many times when I saw him fail to do what he set out to do. While it's a low value position, it's too bad to see him go to a division rival who will, it would not surprise me, to see use him effectively in a run game that is much more of a significant part of the Bears team mm-hmm. than our team. So it makes sense to me that the Lions didn't keep him just because he's not a part of what they do. But it also doesn't thrill me that he's going to a team that we have to face twice a year who likely will use him and at what he does.
Well, so. Yeah. I think a big loss, too, is for the Ladies Lions fans, because I would say that from what I'm told, he is one of the better looking gentlemen on the team. So sorry, ladies. It's a tough one. But
tough. All right,
yeah. Tough. Move on from the bottom of the barrel, Chicago. Please get me away from those things.
The next team up is, of course, the Vikings, and there's a couple things here. Mike Zimmer, this whole eye surgery thing has been going for him for quite a while. Unlike, in the NBA where Steve Kerr had to miss significant time during a major part of the year for his team.
That team has so much potential. If only he could see it.
Is that a joke about Mike Zimmer's eyes?
Yes, it is.
Okay. he's been going through all this stuff that he missed the early chunk of the offseason, and you wonder, if that has any effect, if that's if his presence lack thereof means a less significant, off-season for the young players or not. I don't know. I don't think it's worth making a big deal about, but nonetheless, he seems to finally have gotten to the tail end of it. And while I don't root for division rival, I'm also not going to root against the health of a person because of football. So good
it
for him.
Won't preclude me from making jokes.
Right. jokes I can do. The other news out of Minnesota is the continued progression of Teddy Bridgewater back from his gruesome injury last offseason. And he was on the field practicing today or yesterday, as it were, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he threw a pass, which may not sound that significant, but like he threw a pass, more than 5 yards. Actually, what was funny was the Twitter, feed of it, the Twitter video that I saw. in the video, if you're not paying close enough attention, they're on the practice field, so there's a lot of things going on. And he throws the ball, and it goes off screen. And like a half second later, a different ball thrown by somebody else comes down and lands in the hands of a receiver about 10 yards. I think it's actually a cornerback, so it looks like it got picked off, 10 yards down the field. and so if somebody were to cut that, I would really appreciate it. So it would make it look like Teddy Bridgewater threw a 10-yard interception not that I'm hating on Teddy Bridgewater, just for future, razzing of Vikings fans. If you happen to see that video and are able to do that, I would love if somebody would post that in our comments for this podcast. But he threw a pass and it worked, and Vikings fans are excited. He still is unlikely to be a real candidate to
see the field starts or active duty this year, right? Because they're going to toll his contract.
I wouldn't even go that far. He's just it's not exactly like Sam Bradford has a long history of, health.
Do you mean Super Bowl hero Sam Bradford? Is that the Sam Bradford you're talking about?
Clearly, yes. That's what I'm talking about. But so it would not surprise me if, if they put him on IR to start the year. But were something to happen to Bradford, I think they, depending on how things continue to progress, if they continue to progress at the rate that it appears they are, he probably won't be ready, week one, but he might be ready halfway through the season. And if something were to happen, they might be willing to take that, chance. And especially now that you can bring two players off of IR, that's a team that might end up taking advantage of that, new rule shift. And we might see some Teddy Bridgewater this next year. I'm not saying it's likely, but no, it's certainly possible.
No, just for the contract reasons alone, he will not see the field, the team. He will not see active duty at all. He'll IR. They'll toll his contract. And then next year, depending on how his healing process has gone, they'll either extend him via the option or they will let him roll off. That's my prediction. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. Moving up to the Packers, I honestly don't have anything to say about them. So
FTP, baby.
Yep, that's all I got to say.
All right, that's it for Around the Division this week. Thank you again, Case, for the excellent rundown. Don't forget, guys, when you're doing your gaming, when you're doing your internet, and you got roommates or family who are using it for other things, the best way to ensure that your connection stays sound is through NetDuma. NETDUMA.com. Head on over there and get yourself the lag-busting connection powerhouse. NetDuma, slice out a nice chunk of that that network bandwidth for you, the internet bandwidth for yourself, and ensure that nobody else infringes upon your rights to great internet. Great, great tool, and they give you a discount using the discount code FOOTBALL. It's really spectacular. It's changed my gaming life, and it's actually made everybody's experience in either gaming, streaming video, whatever else we're doing at the same time here, it's made it better. NetDuma, NETDUMA.com, and use that keyword FOOTBALL, that coupon code FOOTBALL, and get yourself a great deal, 10% off, I believe it is, and they give us a little kickback for that. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. Remember, we need your involvement. We use those comments in the subreddit to get feedback. The Amir Abdullah story really broke out of those comments this week. So don't forget, bring us in the loop on the things you're finding. It was great. And you guys are the reason we're the number one Detroit Lions podcast. So keep those comments coming. Also, don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/DetroitLionsPodcast or DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on that Patreon link. Anything you guys can donate is very much appreciated. We're a little bit on hold on getting the streaming part up for our Patreon donors because I've got this big move coming up, as mentioned in the announcements and some of the shows coming up. But no worries. Once we get that new studio set up, we're going to be rocking and rolling, and we got a lot of new exciting stuff coming for you guys. Check us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and follow us on the Twitter machine at DET Lions Podcast, DET Lions Podcast. It's the best place to see Case. That's right. All right. Don't forget to leave us a voice message via Skype at Detroit Lions Podcast. It's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or give us a call and leave a voice message on the Lions line. That's 929-33-LIONS, 929-335-4667. Give us a call, leave a message, and get a chance to hear yourself on the show. Lastly, be sure to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and subscribe to the podcast. That way you can get us to come inside your little box automatically. Who wouldn't want that? Thank you for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Let's bring it in here together. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go, baby. Lions on three. One, two, three.
Lions!
God damn it, did I close that tab? I think I closed that tab.
He sounds like he's a Disney movie with all those birds chirping.